Is that what you're going to sound like at Frostapalooza?
Yeah.
I think so.
Maybe. I think Brad took all the cool bass lines. I'm not going to throw Brad in the bus, but it's his birthday. It's fine. He took all the cool bass lines.
Makes sense.
I get to play some cool ones. But.
That's cool. That's coming up in a few weeks. So we'll see you there if anybody happens to be going. Yeah, no guest this week. Just a normal episode of the Shop Talk Show. I keep getting in trouble about stuff that I publish because I'm a little hot on the publish button. I always have been. You know, I got 20 years of
publish
press
first.
And publish.
Yeah, you're good at it. You're like probably the best at it, to be honest. I'm not going to blow smoke, but you're like kind of the best I've ever come across. So,
well, it's like a matter of like, ah, crap, I got to get something out today. So here we go.
You're like the Michael Jordan of blogging. Like the only person, Kotke and like Gruber and friggin' and who's the other guy?
Definitely not in their
Doctorow
league.
Doctorow are the only people in your league, dude.
How does Doctorow write books too? That's something else.
Dude, I don't. And he's like obviously not using AI because he's completely anti AI. Yeah. But like he's just like, here's 7,000 words on whatever
is
the
good.
International highway code system or whatever.
Yeah, it's like some niche subject too. I love it when people like have the ability to like wrap their mind around some faraway subject. Robin Sloan's not in the blogging category, but he is a hell of a good writer and has a new book out, Moonbound. Yeah, I'm halfway through it. I can't even remember the name of the book because it doesn't. The moon is a. It does come up in the book, but it's pretty. It's pretty tangential. I've been really enjoying it so far. It's weird as heck.
Really, super weird.
Yeah,
it's on my short weird. List to read, but I
would recommend it so far. I find it very endearing and fun, but also it's like wow, some very big concepts thrown at you right away, and then you know you get a quarter way through the book, and they're like, and now this world is super different again, you know. And you can kind of see looking at, you know, you put the book on its side, and you can see these like it's kind of split into four chunks. And I'm just waiting for the next one now. Now that one has happened and like a lot's different, I'm like, oh, dude, they're going to do it again, aren't they?
He's gonna switch it up again, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. I Asimov's Second Foundation or something was a book I'm thinking of in that regard. It was like time jumpy, like you go to the next chapter and it's either 30 years or 300 years in the future. And I just was like, whoa, man, I'm not this good. I feel like I'm time jumping. I'm like, who is this?
I get that like, can be fun narratively and stuff. But yeah, you got to be really careful, especially for the dummies like me, you know, where sometimes I'm reading and I'm not, it's like weird to say, but I'm not like, I don't have all of my attention for you, even though all I'm doing is staring at the words on a page. My brain might be like a little disconnected. I'm like, make it easier for me, which is why I don't begrudge some people that just read like young adult fiction and stuff. Like it's just not that demanding of you as a reader.
My wife is all in on YA and just rips through books. Probably like 70 a year. She just shreds. It's just
really,
it's just cause it's easier. And she's out of YA books, like literally. So she's starting to read books I read. And I'm like, are you sure? But anyway,
I like it. Here's one thing I got in trouble about was I just I published something and then with like a major omission, you know, that's one way you can blog, dude, is if you have a strong system for saving links. Because you come across 100 links a day, I probably save 5 of them, you know? And that list is really long. And I try to curate it and get rid of old stuff or whatever. But then there's always something to write about or think about or something. And you just kind of look through the list and you see if anything's interesting that you feel like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, I've had enough thoughts about this that it's time. One of them was that I saved that. I think it was Chris Wainsworth or whatever, one of the GitHub, OG GitHub founders or something, has put some money behind a independent browser project called Ladybird, which appears to be a fork of Servo OS or Serenity OS, I think it is. Anyway, yeah, that goes to show how much I know about it, right? Like, I have any right to be writing about it. But all I was trying to do is point at it and say, hey, look, isn't this interesting? And it's interesting in that I probably have said this on this show many times in the past, is that, like, we used to have four browser engines. Now we have three. And I'm talking about, I'll always like to just refer to them as Safari, Chrome, and Firefox, because it's like that's how we think of them. But of course, the browser engines underneath the hood have different names.
WebKit, Chromium, like Blend,
Gecko, and whatever that is. Gecko is that dead
Gecko.
Now?
Is it? Yeah.
This is something else now. That's why it's hard to remember, because I don't like live in that Servo world. I use the browser.
The renderer, right? Okay.
Well, Servo is the Agalia one that I forgot. That's why, I mean, I wasn't in trouble. It just was, you know, Mr. Brian likes to keep us in check about Agalia stuff.
This is part-time
job. So Ladybird's out there, and it looks like it has the nicest designed homepage of them, let's say, you know. So when you see it, you're like, wow, they look serious, you know. I've mentioned that on this show before, too. A really nicely designed page is like a cheat code for people taking your product like way more seriously. All the pixels are in a little bit different place, and then people open their eyes and they look and they really are like, holy cow, this is for real. When all it is just some nicely put together HTML and CSS. But it's the nicest one, so I take it more seriously. It's working on me, you know.
Marketing,
not to mention,
baby,
it has this GitHub guy behind it and whatever, and some other OG kind of people. A little controversy around it, and, like, you know, some old people dug up some old, like, PRs and stuff against Serenity OS, where these people were like a little curt, and, you know, one of them had to do with, like, somebody replaced the word he with they in a PR, and they're like, this is not a place for politics kind of thing. And you're like,
that's
douche. Something. You know, I'm sure that the story there is probably a little bit deeper. I looked at the PR and they replaced one instance of it in the entire docs. And I could see having a bad day and being like, I don't want to, like, if you're going to do this, maybe just do it. Don't just be like, I'm going to pick one line of code and make a PR about it, you know, instead of being, I don't know, a little more thoughtful about the whole approach to it. But so who knows what the whole story is there? But of course, now that comment thread is just flooded with people being like, screw you, man.
Yeah.
Or screw you.
Dude, I just, why do people, like, want to die on that hill, man? Like,
yeah.
Like, because I read that PR. There just works better. It's just because it's not, you know, you don't need a gender-specific web developer or whatever, browser developer in that situation. Like, just.
No, yeah, the right answer is just merge it or whatever. But I could kind of see, like, I don't like half-assed PRs myself either. Like, did you scrounge the whole docs and change it all then and present the case why
you're. Yeah, did you search GitHub for the word he and just start rifling PRs, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And if somebody's having a bad day, I mean, I kind of get it. Not an excuse. It's still, you should, instead of, and then they didn't double down, but they just didn't deal with it. They just closed the issue, you know, like, oh, too hot, closing, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not even on the Ladybird project. That's on the original Serenity OS project.
Oh, wow. Whatever. I thought it was Ladybird. Okay.
Well. No, it's not. But Ladybird is forked from it or whatever. Anyway, okay, we've said the word Ladybird enough. What is it? It's we're going to write from absolutely scratch a new browser engine and all the parts of the browser engine. So you need, like, a JavaScript machine and a CSS machine and, you need parsers and, you know, things that deal with JPEGs. And, you know, it's lots of parts. So there's not just one thing called a browser engine. There's lots of parts. They all come together and they make a browser. And they're saying, for the most part, we're going to write all this stuff from scratch, but we had the head start of Serenity. And now that we're broken off from Serenity, who was real heavy on, we're only ever going to write every line of this from scratch, Ladybird says, we'll use third-party stuff if we need to. Like, why write a JPEG machine from scratch when there's a free JPEG machine sitting right here? And the whole why of the thing is that, in their words, Google's just got its hands too deep into everything. Most browsers are Chrome or Chrome forks, of the browser engines that power it. Then there's Apple, but Apple gets a ton of money from Google for being the default browser engine thing there. So Google's fingers are there too. And Mozilla exists solely off of Google's teat, as far as we know. So Google's has their hands deeply in all three of these browser engines. Now, could that be debated? Are there people listening to this who are bristling at that characterization? Absolutely. Those are their words, not necessarily mine. This is the why of Lady Bird by that Chris guy. So,
okay. I like the ethos. I like the ethos. I think, yeah, like, are you, you know, as I understand it, the WebKit budget is not determined by the search agreement deal. Like, but you could theorize, or if you treat it as one big bucket of money, then yes, it is maybe funded by the search agreement deal. I don't know.
Apple does whatever Apple wants to do. I'm sure that that's the lightest connection here.
Yeah.
I'm sure Apple's happy to take some of Google's money, but like, Apple has more money than God. So
Apple's browser is also very foundational to their operating system. So I don't think they would ever, both operating systems. So I don't think they'd ever let it go.
They don't get pushed around by Google, is what I'm trying to say. But whatever.
For sure.
Do I like the idea of an independent browser engine that's not under anyone's thumb whatsoever, who has pledged that they are not going to, that they're, you know, they're for the users that use this thing. They are not going to take a default search engine money. They won't take it. So, wow, right? Yeah, wow. But I always thought, you know, circling back all the way to what I said, I've talked about this on this show before. What I was saying, what I've talked about, is that I don't think it's possible. I don't think we'll ever see in our lifetimes another independent browser engine. And the reason I thought that is because I'm like, these things were being worked on when I was born. They're practically, there is a lifetime of code behind browser engines, tens of millions of lines of code that have evolved and evolved and evolved and evolved to get to where we've gotten, you know, and have incredible security implications all throughout them. They're designed to adhere to really long, really complicated specs, hundreds and thousands of them, of these specs. Like, that is not a trivial project. It's an unbelievably complicated project to even start on, let alone end up with a product, especially when you're not going to use any code whatsoever from any of the other engines. So I thought, conservatively, if you're going to start over, in my opinion, conservatively, let's say you took 100 developers, you paid them all $100,000 a year, and you gave them 5 years to do it. Let's say they could do it. That's $50 million. And that's low, because those define, you know, I just think that's not enough developers. It's not enough time, and you're not paying them enough money. That's conservative on all three estimates. So who's got 50? Let's go with it. Who's got $50 million to throw at this project? And where is the $50 million going to recoup itself? Because that's how business works. It doesn't exist. It's like not going to happen. That was my thinking, right? But here's how I'm already wrong, so I'm willing to throw in the towel here. Lady Bird now exists, and apparently it's rendering some websites. So, like, we'll see if it goes anywhere, but doing okay. And then I say, well, there's Flow too. Have you heard of Flow? That's another company that's trying to produce one. Apparently it's a little more secretive, a little closed source. Nobody quite knows what's going on there, but they have they have screenshots of their browser rendering stuff, and they try to keep people updated and stuff. And then I forgot to mention Servo, but Servo is kind of ushered by Igalia, and, you know, I'm told is the furthest along of all three of them, and is passing some 1.3 million web page tests, which is the big test suite against all browsers. So they're doing pretty good too. Now there's three companies trying to do this, or three organizations doing this. So I'm wrong. You know, like, this seems healthy. Like, it seems like people are trying to find. Now, do I think in a perfect world, all three of these would get together and use their resources to actually make one actually happen? Yeah, but that's never how anything works, you know. It's just, but I just thought it could happen because there's no money yet. You know, like there's no, I get it when there's two existing businesses that all have their different business models. They're too hard to smash together then because it just has gotten too complicated incentive wise and money wise. But these are just open source things, except Flow, I guess. But Flow is the one I understood the most at early on, because one of their things when you go to the Flow website is, here's one of the things they have is a TV browser. They're going to make a browser that's very specifically great for TVs. And I was like, that I get. Because then you look at that 50 million number and you're like, eh, it's still a lot of money. But a company like Samsung or something that makes a whole crap load of TVs, if they had some amazing browser product in it, I could see them footing the bill of $15 million over 5 years because they wanted some, they thought that it would bring them some serious competitive advantage. You could kind of see it. Although you go to the Flow page and they have a TV browser already, but that's WebKit.
Right.
So they're making a new browser, but that's not, I don't think the TV angle is.
This seems like it has, a reason, like more so than the others. They're competing in the big field, right? This seems like it's very like, we are going to work on low power browsers. We're going to drive the cost of a kiosk or a web, a TV OS or whatever down to zero, you know, like,
yes. Doesn't like, that seems like that has a business plan behind it where the other two just absolutely don't.
Yeah. Or it's just different. Like they're saying now you can get Flow browser for Raspberry Pi, which is kind of wild, you know, like, which is not, you know, I don't know. Surfing on a Raspberry Pi has never been my favorite experience, but
right.
It's probably, you know, historically you could only use this weird version of Firefox, like ESB or something something weird, but it was just basically like just.
Yeah, at least they have a plan, right? But, you know, I get that big, ambitious open source projects are a thing. Yeah. Like Linux is massive and has tons of contributors and doesn't have any super particularly perfectly clear business plan that I know of, you know? You don't write a check to Linux to spin up Linux on a server, you know? It's just there. It's just open source. You just use it, but clearly it works. And it seems like Lady Bird has a similar model. You go to their website and they're like, the lowest sponsorship is $5,000 and it goes way up from there. And you're like, what do you... To get a logo on a website, like who are you talking to get these checks? But that's what they're gunning for is large scale. That one's particularly
Chris,
for Ladybird.
Are we going to do it? Let's go in.
You know what?
Let's go in. Let's sponsor.
Going on it?
Cool. We're going to have a browser. We're going to have a browser, Chris.
Yeah. I mean, I do like the idea. I'm attracted to how wrong I was about this, and I would like to see it done because it does seem like it's possible that corporate greed gets in the way of any of our existing browser engines to the point where it's just too ridiculous. And there's a future where the browsers of the future are powered by these independent engines.
Well, and we should acknowledge the situation. Google said, we are not going to deprecate third-party cookies. The plan was to deprecate third-party cookies, and Google, like this week, said...
They bailed.
Sorry. That hurts the old pocketbook too much. So that's a deal, right? Like that's a concern. And maybe it broke a bunch of sites. I don't know. But like...
Did it, though? Because the other...
Did it?
The other two browsers did it.
Other browsers are doing it. I don't know. A lot of stuff is busted in Firefox. But then Firefox says... We're turning this privacy thing off by default or whatever. What was that news? I'm murdering that story. Okay. The goal is not to, I'm reading from maketecheasier.com. The goal is not to just deliver your personal data to advertisers, but to allow advertisers to get what they're looking for while also allowing you to keep your privacy. So they have yeah, it was in a Reddit post here, but they're basically like, they opened up this sort of avenue for advertisers to advertise to you. And I don't know what that is, but it's just like, dude, what is Firefox doing?
So even Mozilla is kind of loosening the belt a little bit on what they're allowing to be tracked and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're the like privacy browser, man. And then they like, you know, like.
Right. You know, an interesting one about this is that all of it is in service of powering not just contextual ads, but the kind that's like, oh, I see Dave clicked on Nike shoes. I'm going to show him Nike ads. Nike, 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 right? That's that kind of like tracking-based ad that Meta made popular, kind of. They're like, we know so much about our users that we're able to serve ads that are based on the things that they do. And that's what we're all so annoyed about and don't like, is they're like, don't spy on me. Don't do that. I don't like it. It feels creepy. And at the like Facebook level, you've seen it. Like if you decided to start a dog bakery tomorrow, Dave, it may appeal to you. It may be in books that you read. It may be very highly encouraged that you go onto Facebook and you do an ad campaign targeting dog owners in Austin, Texas, you know, that are within 18 miles of your geographic location. You can do that on Meta, right? That's like a thing that you can do. And that's how they are so big and have made as much money as they've made. But like, there's not a lot of proof, amazingly to me, that that performs terribly much better than just a contextual page. Like you just deciding, hey, I'm just going to run an ad for my dog bakery on like dog bakery websites or dog bakery Facebook pages or whatever, where I don't need tracking information to do so. It's just contextual. It's just, I'm going to put my dog bakery stuff around other dog stuff. That seems to do just as well. So all this privacy breaking crap that browsers are doing and advertising companies are doing, there's no proof that it's any good. That's what blows my mind about all this, is there's so many concessions are made for it when there's no proof it even freaking works.
Yeah. Like I saw this Google post and it was like, oh, if having identity means like a 80% or 50% more likely to get a conversion or something like that. So like it's very valuable to customers. But then that blog post cited another blog post that was on Google that cited that blog post. Like it was just this circular reason, literally just like two Spider-Mans pointing at each other, you know, and like saying, see, ads are good. You know, I don't know. I think I want to read up more on this whole, like, you know, category-based tracking or whatever is better or something like that. Cause yeah, if I have a dog food company, dude, guess what? I want to tell Google or YouTube, any video about dogs, let me put my ad on there, man. You know, like, or I sell USB hubs. I'm Anchor. Guess what? The Verge. I want tech blogs. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's contextual advertising that doesn't need any privacy invasive stuff to do, which
and
is
it's
good.
Just as good, right? Like, and
right.
I've started to wonder, you know, you know this stat more than other people, but I think Vitaly famously said like 75% of people block ads on Smashing or something like that. Or he had some huge number, right? You know, like how many more ads would we serve if they weren't like trying to like follow you around the friggin' internet? You know, like how many more ads could people serve and get in front of eyeballs if like privacy was just guaranteed? So,
right. But there's more reasons for that. It's like some people turn it off because they think it's like an invasion of privacy, which it is.
Yeah.
And but people also do it because performance, because it slows down websites, because ad tech can be so heavy and so gross. You know, you've seen the grossest of them are the ones that do. And I've played with this stuff, so it's like I get it. Or the bidding ones where it's like outright on the fly. It decides like, okay, who's going to like win this page view? And those ones, oh my God, they make like 80 requests. It's like unbelievable how much one. So flipping that off from that perspective, that would be my personal number one reason to turn it off, is because it's just chewing through my bandwidth and just making the insane amount of requests, all of which are trying to steal little bits of privacy stuff to you. So it's all related. But still, the performance is a big deal. But probably I would think the number one reason people use those is because they're visually awful. They push the page around. They lay on top of content. They do all this stuff to make the experience of visiting the website awful. And then all you do is install one little browser extension and the web becomes this like much more palatable place. Like, of course people use them.
Yeah, it's fast. It's calm. It works. I'm not like watching a video and getting...
I'll be on the record and say I use the shit out of ad blockers.
Please. Yeah, but my thing is I respect your choice. But does that defund the web? You know what I mean? Like, how do blogs, good newspapers or whatever, get paid? Is it paywalls now? Like, now we have, everything's a freaking paywall. Crap. That's also bad, you know?
Well, it didn't, you know, on CSS Tricksland, the ways around that kind of thing were, for one thing, a really popular ad blocker was, what are the big ones? There's Ghostery, uBlock Origin, but there's another one. Just AdBlock Plus, I think, is, yeah. I think maybe even the biggest one. And that they had like a philosophy at AdBlock Plus, and the idea was that like they didn't block all ads just because they are ads. They blocked the ones that were gross, and somehow, some way, a buy sell ads had an agreement with them, and they proved up to AdBlock Plus's standards that they did nothing uncouth with the advertising. They sold ads, they displayed ads, but they didn't run trackers, they didn't do weird cookie crap. They just did, there was very a clean advertising company. Even AdBlock Plus, it would get past. So like I could run AdBlock Plus and still see buy sell ads in there. I don't know if that has changed over time or not, but that was impressive. And there's such a thing as sponsored content, where that worked. That was probably our number one seller in the last like 5 years of me running it, is that it was like, do a blog post about the subject. You know, that's kind of like how Daring Fireball does it.
Yeah.
We did even less of them than Daring Fireball did, but that's not ad blockable either. And it can be tasteful. You
know? I see like Jason Linksdorf do that on his like four web devs, one app kind of video or whatever.
Yeah, he gets a big sponsor for each one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, like Amplify or somebody will come in and be like, hey, do this, you know?
Yeah. I think he charges Buco bucks for that too, because a lot of times then they even go so far as using the piece of technology that is the sponsor's thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't know, Twilio sponsors, make sure you do something with Twilio in the video. And and he's so entertaining and the people he gets are so good that you still watch it.
Yeah.
Like my wife gets Vogue magazine, which is 80% ads, and people can't wait to get it.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And magazines are like $20 now. It's so weird. I tried to buy some magazines at the airport recently and I was like, for this podcast, it was a business expense.
I had a good Scientific American the other day. Was
nice. Yeah, but then I was like, oh man, these are just, I'm going to go poor, like learning about, I don't know, how to build the perfect prepping underground bunker. You know, I'm going to go poor.
Yeah, so. Nice. I think they've gone downhill a little bit, not to be old man shakes fist at magazines, but I was trying to be convinced to buy a magazine at the airport the other day. I'm like, these all suck, you know?
Yeah. It's my life goal to be so bored I'll read a magazine. That's one of my life goals, is to just be so fucking bored. I like have like a stack of magazines, old Atlantics next to me, and I just read it like a...
With your feet up?
With my feet up, I'm like a grandpa. Like I got the readers on, the cheaters. I'm just doing it, you know? But not there yet. Not there yet. So, we got in trouble about... Kara, that photo app too.
Did we say something wrong?
Yeah, people wrote in. I want to make sure I got the name right. Yes, Kara app. The big thing about that, I think we were like, you were asked like, is it just an Instagram clone? And I think I was like, yes. But the big thing about it is that it is very, it was when they got like charged like $1 million for their like Vercel usage or whatever. But the big thing about it was they're an anti-AI. Like I think Instagram came out and said, we're going to run AI on all your photos. And their whole principle is we don't do AI, and you can pay for this feature called, I want to think it's called Gleam or something like that. Web app's not loading. So that sort of gives me
it's
working okay for you. I guess maybe
this bandwidth. It is insane how many images load on this app though. How do they stop it? Is it hand curated?
Well, I think there's like a little process, almost like watermarking or something like that. So you like can kind of like fudge the EXIF data or something like that. And so when AI comes around,
that's how it knows.
Or an AI comes around, it just sees like squigglies or something. I wish I could see the technology, because I would like to.
It seems like one that wouldn't be worth fighting, and be like, oh, we're going to fight really hard so that we can post
Glaze.
AI.
It's called Glaze.
Glaze, that's the project. Technology that
Yeah, the Glaze
keeps AI crap off stuff.
What is Glaze and how does it work? The Glaze project is developed by the SAND Sand Lab at University of Chicago to protect human artists by disrupting style mimicry in the training of generative AI models. So it's like a Glaze will try to like basically like, you know, if you try to train on this image, it's not going to give you that result or whatever. So I'm not sure how it accomplishes that.
I see. It's protective against what you upload. But what if I make a Kara app account and then I go over to Midjourney and I type in, you know, sexy warrior holding sword or whatever, get it, and then just uploaded it to my Kara account?
You could do that. But I maybe you get flagged. I don't know. So
I would think you'd get flagged. Yeah. I wonder if like every user is so hyper vigilant and their eye is so good, they could spot AI. What are we calling it? Slop. They can spot slop AI a mile slop. Away.
Yeah. It's funny how you can tell like a Midjourney in a Dolly, oh, yeah. You know,
you can still tell, but don't you think those days are limited, or do you think that's going to be a forever? Like, I feel like I can tell immediately, you know, be like, yeah, AI, whatever it is, I can tell. But
I wonder if it's going to get a little, I bet it gets better. That's my, I bet there's like one more leap. Yeah. Right. But I think it's still going to have this, like, you know, I don't know. I think it's going to get better, but I think it's going to have this like leap where the fidelities maybe, or more expressive, or the styles are more expressive or something like that. But I think it's, you know, but it'll be weird. It'll be like, there's a hot dog on that Buddhist temple, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting how many, yeah, right. There'll be tells.
Yeah.
It's interesting how much of the news around this is that like, well, we're out of data. We used it all up. like all, anything that human beings has ever produced is now smurfed into these models, and they're as smart as they're going to get. So if there's innovation, it's not going to be because we find more data. It's going to be because, you know, innovation and how that data is used. So that kind of makes me feel good in a way. And that, like, it seems like if the models are doing as good as they can do, that the you can invent a new style, you know, you can write in such a way or create in such a way that doesn't look like the styles it's producing. And then bada bing, you're cool again.
I mean, yeah, I go back and forth. I mean, I think the slop thing is real. It's just everywhere, man. It feels really impersonal. Does that make sense? Like, it feels very impersonal. But like, if I have an image in my head, you know, but I don't have like decades to learn how to Photoshop it. Can I do it? Can you let me have fun with these things? I don't know.
I thought people would be more mad about it. Like I'll call them out by name. There's a thing, and I see people link to it all the time, and I've read decent stuff on it. It's called the new stack.io. It's a publication, right? They publish lots of stuff. I can point you right at stuff that it's like definitely AI slop. Just all over it, you know? And it doesn't seem like anybody gives a crap, you know? I think that's just where we're at. I don't know why. It really bothers me. I can't look at anybody that links to it and just be like, oh, that website that publishes AI slop? No, thanks. I won't be reading that. Because some of it isn't, you know? It seems like the stuff people are linking to isn't AI slop. It just is. If you poke around on there, you're like, yeah, that's garbage. And the fact that you're willing to go there at all is so like offensive to my life career of handcrafting content with my brain and fingers and stuff that I just can't. But then, you know, are people not mad because I'm just old and wagging my finger? Or would there be people out there be like, what are you talking about, idiot old man? How could you not publish this stuff? It's like, it's easier and it makes your business viable. So.
Right, right. But then, you know, it's people take it the whole full thing. Like, it's like whole YouTube videos, like with a robot talking, you know, like the TikTok robot talking over, you know, and I'm just like, are we done? Are we done coming up with ideas? We're done. We just do some bullet points and that's it. So
the part of the problem is it's not just me like, oh, this, it's not me knowing that it was slop. It's that, you know, slop has some specific meaning, right? Like slop is like untouched, only lightly edited, if anything. It's just like take output, put on website. That's what slop is, right? So if you read some article that's like reasons to use React in 2024, and it's full of like, it has state management built in, you know, or like just stuff that you're like, what are you talking about? This is written by just somebody typed that title into a machine and copy and pasted the output and put it on a blog post. The problem is it's bad. It's not helpful. It's not helping me do the thing that that article set out to do. That's the problem.
Yeah. I sort of feel like it's not going to accomplish the goal you were hoping for. I mean, maybe SEO and ad bucks or something, but like,
right. That goal, unfortunately, might still be being served.
Although I've read Google's changed their thing, and they're kind of like selectively surfacing sites now or something like that, which is kind of,
oh God, did you read that news? Yeah. I couldn't, it was so shocking to me. I couldn't even believe it. I'm like, are you sure? Like, apparently somebody has so boldly said that they don't even index the whole web anymore. They're not even trying.
They're not
you
even
have to
trying.
Be on a short list of websites that get serviced. And like, if you go make a website now, you're definitely won't be on that list. And you just won't show up in Google results, period. I was like, that's a bold ass statement. Is that really what's happening? How do you know that for sure?
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
If that's true, that's pretty bombshell, I think. That'd be like a pretty big scoop. Google has given up on indexing the internet. What?
Well, I think it was like kind of like latent indexing or something like that versus that was the test they used or something like that. But yeah, it's pretty interesting days here for content. I don't know. I feel like you're disrespecting your readers, you know, if you're just doing that, you know, and you're not putting the effort in to clean it up and make it yours, you know. So not against, I guess I'm not against a tool for helping you think, but I am also against like a,
no, yeah.
I want to read your thoughts. That's what I
use
want
the
to
tool,
do.
Don't publish the slop. Yeah, yeah, I get it. And I do, I use them more and more. It's not like I'm against all AI, period. But yeah, it tends to be something where you just have a more and more intuition these days when you can guess that a tool like that is just going to give you like a cleaner answer than you wanted to before. Like, oh, what was this technology used to be called before it changed names or something? Like that thing's, it's just going to tell you. It's just going to give you the answer in a sentence, you know? Whereas Googling, it feels like a wild card these days of where you're going to find that answer. Okay. The other thing I got in trouble about was about view transitions.
Whoops.
You know those? You use them on Dave's...
DaveRupert.com.
Yep. I actually kind of want to see right now. Are they... How are they... Are they working okay for you?
I had to fix them. I had to switch over to the CSS property, the view transition auto CSS property over the meta tag. I had the meta tag and it kind of wasn't working. And I switched over to the thing. They are not working in Safari or Safari TP, which is supposed to have it or a version of it. And so, but maybe it's not the MPA stuff. And so I'm kind of like,
right.
I don't know why it's not working in Safari. I still don't know. So
yeah, I don't know either. But there is two kinds of view transitions, as we pointed out before. There's a JavaScript API that you like. It's a function, and you call it, and within the callback of the function, you change the DOM in some way, and then it transitions to before that and after that in the DOM, right? So it's kind of like for anything that you're trying to change on a page, or even if you're trying to change the quote unquote page, like in a single page app, you could use that API. Mm-hmm. More interesting, even though I think that one is still extremely cool and have used it in production sometimes. For example, we had, I guess it's in production as far as I'm concerned in our Code Pen Alpha, but there's like a list of collections. And if you add a pen to a collection, it just uses the Vue Transitions API to move that collection to the top of the list, being like, yeah, you're probably using that one. I'm going to make it easier for you to reach for. When we reordered that collection, that's the Vue Transition that was being used.
Right.
On DaveRupert.com, you're not using that kind. You're using what is called cross-document Vue Transitions, what you called it, which I like. I think the feature flag calls it Vue Transitions for Navigation. That's another thing, but it's a Vue transition between like a full page refresh. Like you clicked an anchor link, nothing is happening to that anchor link other than the browser's just like, okay, I will now change pages to that URL. Here we go. Now those do need to be same domain. So in the case of Dave, it's just like going from your homepage to the URL of a blog post or whatever. And then if two elements on the old page and the new page happen to have the same CSS property applied to them, a Vue transition name, it has to match exactly. And there can't be two that have the same name on the same page. Otherwise, the whole thing will just bail out. But if there happens to be, you know, Vue transition name blog post one, on both the old page and the new page, it will transition between them. And you can control that with CSS. But even if you write no other CSS other than the name, it will move. And that's how your site works. The title of the blog post moves up from your list of posts to the top of the page at the top. That's how yours works. And it seems to be working pretty nicely, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what the trouble part was that I've been saying, and a part of this is based on an Eric Portis blog post. I'm willing to bring Eric into it because he was public about it anyway, but I've been talking to some other people that I won't drag into it yet because I don't know if they care to be dragged into it. But Eric's post was saying that Vue transitions break incremental rendering. Have you heard that?
I've heard, yes, and I've heard Eric say that, and I super kind of still don't understand it, but then I think there's a block rendered equals blocking or something meta tag you can put in, but that's kind of all
lock
I know.
Equals rendering. It's the other
lock
way around.
Equals rendering.
But here's the idea, and I think this is provable, and I'm surprised it's not showing up on your site in a way. But okay, this is how my brain worked, right? If now you have some CSS where you wrote at view-transition auto or something like that. It's a little tiny block of CSS, right? And you put it on your page. That tells the browser, okay, I'm doing this. I'm doing Vue transitions for navigations. It's happening, baby. So when I click a link on page two, the one I'm going to, please look for things with a matching Vue transition name so that I can transition between the two things. And in my brain, I was like, well, obviously the browser can't paint the second page then until it has completed its search for matching elements. So there must be some kind of delay between navigating from page one to page two so that it can be sure that it found something with a thing. And that's what I thought it meant, breaks incremental rendering. I thought it would be like, well, there'll be this big delay until it figures out if it needs to do any transitions or not, which it wouldn't have had to do otherwise. But then some people from Google get involved, and they even called a post I wrote on this out in a misconceptions about Vue transitions.
Misconception number four.
Post. Yeah, you see that?
Yeah, yeah.
But they're right. It doesn't. It does not break incremental rendering. Here's what happens is that, you know, there's this thing called first contentful paint or whatever. The browser is happy to do a quick first render of a page as fast as it possibly can, based on lots of complicated stuff, like what's going on with your style sheets and where they're being loaded and whether you have blocking JavaScript resources or not and fonts and stuff. There's all kinds of stuff that it decides. But at some point, it's going to make a first contentful paint, and it probably very likely is not your complete page. It's probably just a portion of it. What's happening there is that the Vue transition will only work if it's in the first contentful paint. So on your site, it must be very consistent. Like your site is so fast and well-coded, Dave, that the matching Vue transition names are always present when you click between them. But let's say your blog post, you decided to display 1,000 blog posts on your homepage.
Right.
And you're now clicking back from a thing. Like it's not going to be in the first contentful paint. Thus, the Vue transition will not run.
Okay. So if it's okay,
it'll just bail out. So that's the problem. But here I made a really simple demo with just like 20 images on the page, and I had, you know, the on between page one and page two, the matching view transition name was just like one apart. It was the first image on one and the second image on the other. And I found that I about 50% of the time with the view transition run. I'll show you the demo after this.
Yeah, yeah.
But 50% of the time. And then I was talking with people that were involved in this, and they're like, yeah, that sounds about right. 50%, you know, that's about what you're going to get with view transitions. And I was like, 50% of the time your view transitions will work? It's a lot better on DaveRupert.com, but my demo, 50% of the time.
That's not enough.
That's bad. And it was nothing. There's no JavaScript loaded on the page. There's one tiny CSS style sheet. I was like, that's awful. You can't tell people that 50% of the time your thing's going to run. And that's, of course, on a high power device that I have. So on a lower power device, your chances are real low.
Yeah.
So here's how you fix it. Let's say you want, I don't know, something like 100% of the time it to work. There's a couple ways to do it. The way it now that they're talking about, and this is in that misconceptions article, you can put a link tag in the head of your document that has an ID of an element in it. So you're going to have to give an element of the ID. And this ID will be one of the view transition, whatever view transition you need it to do. Do not render the page until you have rendered this element with this ID.
Right?
You could put a whole bunch of them in there if you had to. So it will block the rendering of the page until it has rendered that, and thus your view transition will work. Now, it sounds kind of horrible, right? Like, okay, now that's even more onus on the developer to figure out what crap I need to block for to get this thing to run. Nobody's going to do that, you know? It's one of these things like responsive images, which is a great API, but nobody handwrites it, you know? Like, you're going to use a tool to do it or you're not going to do it is how that's going to shake out. It's going to be like this. There's no way anybody's going to hand author this. It's like a tool's going to do it or you're not going to do it. And it's like, should you be doing it is another question. Like, should you be render blocking like this? Probably not, you know, like that's not great on slow connections.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, it's like some people render block anyway. I mean, just using a JavaScript framework, if you're client side rendering, guess what? You're render blocking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or some people like really hate FOUT, the flash of unstyled text. So they use a font loader in JavaScript and they don't render the page on purpose until the font is ready to render so that you don't see the FOUT. That's a thing that people do. Now you're doing render blocking. So this is just in that category of I'm render blocking on purpose because I have designed something on my page that I want to work. I want these view transitions to run, thus I'm blocking rendering until they're ready to transition. So they're giving us that tool. I just like bristle at the tools a little bit. I'm like, really? That is not what I thought we were getting with these view transitions.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if I'm doing anything, I'm cheating because I have like my style sheet loaded and in the head, you know, I'm very conscientious about that first packet of 14 kilobytes that comes across the wire that is able to paint a whole page, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think like, I think about that a lot. And so maybe that's why mine's like working more often than not.
I think it is. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a hard bar for everybody.
It might get a little easier too, I'll say. Like, I think they're talking about putting the blocking attribute in on arbitrary HTML elements. So you don't have to make this link tag at the top. You can put it in there. But still, it's going to be a choice between render blocking and getting reliable view transitions or not.
Yeah.
And having...
I mean, you can also just do the JavaScript way if you like, you super hate it. But I kind of want to be as lazy as possible about this. And then like, I don't know, my feeling is like, if it doesn't work, oops, like we just did something wrong, you know, like either their device had wasn't fast enough or my page wasn't rendering fast enough. Like
exactly.
Oops. And so like,
exactly.
I think
so their default is smart. The fact that they didn't render block by default and hurt performance of the web just for this feature was the right call.
Yeah. Like, cause if you had a, like my whole blog with like my Discus comments and which I don't have anymore, but like, you know, yeah. wait for all of that to load before it like did a transition, that'd be a bummer.
I kind of thought that's what it was doing so that it would like even run JavaScript. So it would know if you applied, if you could transition name via JavaScript or something, but it does not.
Oh, really?
But yeah, so part of me does think that way, that same way, like, hey, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Cause it is kind of this perfect progressive enhancement API. Like if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. Nobody's like not understanding what happens, really. It's fine. But 50% just feels like this horrible number. Like I'd rather not have it happen at all than happen just randomly half the time. That's like not what designers will especially hate that.
Yeah. I think though you win by doing less too. Like don't do, you know, if you have a whiz bang animation, you're like a flash animation or something that you're hoping to pull off, like you're going to have to wait and load it. You know, that's old flash rules, you know?
Yeah. Right. And so in a way, this isn't any different, right? Like you want something whiz bang, you got to pay for it.
Whiz bang takes time, man. Whiz bang takes CPU threads and everything. So I feel like you can win by doing a little bit less, you know? You know, I see some sluggish performance and I do have questions about that, but I don't know. It's usually around images and stuff like that. So I'd be curious what the future is for all that. Or if there's like, I'd love a DevTools tool that just said, hey, buddy, like you put it on here. And if you did it, put it not on the image, it would actually go faster or something like that, you know, like, or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm using it. I like the JavaScript view transition stuff too. It's pretty killer, you know, and it's free. That's like, or it's free-ish, you know. The hoops you had to jump through to pull this off previously is just like you'd have to like lay out the whole page, hide and lay out the second next page, the second state, and then like set a bunch of CSS properties and then like tween between all of them and stuff like that. And it was just not a like we have it really good right now. So
this stuff is cool. This story's not over either. I'm subscribed to a few threads where they're talking about interesting stuff. The JavaScript API one in particular, you know, I feel like even in kind of trivial usage, there's just stuff that feels annoying about it. This idea that you need to handcraft a unique view transition name for every damn thing is like a little onerous-ish and it's easy to screw up too. That like really is that the best we can do? And there's discussions about like, can it be like view transition name auto or something like that? Like these are all different. You know, you know what's going on here. Just do it. Do what I mean. Because for example, if you want your list items to reorder all individually, and for example, you want, let's say part of that reordering change the intrinsic size of the list itself. That's like a little tricky ski to figure out. And I don't know. They definitely are all going to need the same names. And they're going to be so dumb. They're going to be, you know.
LI1, LI2. Yeah.
Yeah, right. You're just going to use an integer for sure.
I'm just injecting a style tag on the page. I am not putting this in my CSS. I'm just going to programmatically. Oh,
that's another good point. You know, is now like, you're definitely, yeah, absolutely. You're not going to do li nth child 1 has this view transition name. In fact, that won't even work because it's not the nth child 1 anymore.
Right. It'll switch it up, right? So, I would love like a generic, like, you know, but I'm thankful for what we have. And I think that speculation API is kind of cool too. Like you can basically tell the browser, hey, here's some top URLs. You might, if you got extra bandwidth, you might want to go check these out too and just preload them. Thank you. Goodbye. You know?
Yeah. That's how it kind of got, I mentioned that cause I was speculating about, and I've seen some other people write about it, like Ryan said in tours, I thought that was going to be the savior for view transitions is that if the page has been pre-rendered anyway, well, hey, now there is no delay between the two things. And I think that might actually pan out to be true still.
Yeah. So if you think about like a homepage, you got the top five articles, just go ahead and chuck those in the speculation, you know, and and then you provided your cool experience for your top level stuff, you know, and if your bottom levels, your deep down in the links dirt, isn't that great? That's fine. whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Life happens. So
you don't even. It's not. It's actually more chill than that. Like you can do that. I think you could give it exact URLs, but the problem with that is now at least four of them aren't going to be the one you click on.
Right, right. So now you just.
So yeah. You're like you've done that, but the chill way to do it is it's basically it's on a mouse enter thing. Mm-hmm. Like if you enter a link. It can tell that you've mouse entered, that you might click it, and then it renders it then.
See? Look at that.
Which is pretty, it's pretty cool. Because it's something like 500 milliseconds it's got of extra bonus time. And when you're loading a website, that's actually like a lot. Like it can do a lot in that time.
Yeah. Ideally, interactions are about 400 milliseconds and stuff. So, Well, anyway,
right,
interesting days. Yeah, got a hard stop here, but interesting days for view transitions. Hopefully it gets better.
And I like how optimistic you are, too. So it's rein me in. I've been Captain Negative lately.
No, hey, it's fine. I think it comes and goes. But I think it's also just kind of like it's better than it's ever been. But there's just some weird edges now we got to like figure out and file down, you know? Like it's so good right now. Like has selector. Oh my God. You ever do like a really has is attribute foo attribute bar? Guys, ugly as sin, but it's just great that you can do that now. So I like where it's going.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. Well, thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your pocket. Sure. Sorry, I favorite up. And if you know why my website doesn't work on Safari, please reach out to me. And Chris, join us in the Discord, patreon.com/shoptalkshow. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.